All right, so good morning, everyone. Hope you slept well. I hope things have been going well so far. So what we're going to do this morning is start talking a bit more about insight practice. Just to recap, Lee has already mentioned that in the context of the broader Buddhist path, we have these three trainings: sila, samadhi, and panya, ethics, concentration, mind training, meditation, and panya, insight, wisdom, that kind of thing. And we can see these as each one supporting the next in turn. So if we set up a strong ethical foundation, then that gives us the kind of situation in which we're more likely to have a peaceful mind, which sets us up well for our samadhi practice, sets us up to be able to do things like enter the jhanas. And when we've got a mind that's concentrated, well, as it says in Digha Nikaya 2, which Lee's going to talk more about in one of the evening talks, once you've done your jhana practice, with a mind thus concentrated, purified and bright, unblemished, free from defects, pliant, malleable, steady, and attained to imperturbability, one directs and inclines it to knowing and seeing. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Pliant, malleable, attained to imperturbability. So this is referring to doing insight practice, doing jhana practice to concentrate, steady, focus the mind, and then shifting into a different attitude in practice, an attitude that's more about investigating what's going on rather than stabilizing and absorbing as we do in concentration practice. Now, the tricky thing about panya, about wisdom, is that you can't really teach it directly. Lee's teacher Ayakema would say that it's actually impossible to teach wisdom directly. You can't do it. What we can do as teachers is share methods that will enable you to find it for yourselves. That's really the only kind of wisdom that's worth anything on this path, something that you've found for yourself in your own practice. And so over the course of the morning talks for the rest of the retreat, we'll be discussing a range of insight methods for exploring what's going on. Insight practice, typically speaking, involves asking questions like, who and what are we? What's going on around us? What's going on within us? That kind of thing. Exploring our sense of ourselves, our relationship to our surroundings, nature of self and world, and that kind of thing. It's not about doing a kind of philosophy. It's not about trying to come up with an intellectually perfect theory about what the universe is made of or anything like that. It's about exploring our first-person subjective experience to see what's actually going on a moment-to-moment basis. Now, one way of doing that that I know some of you are familiar with because you mentioned it in your interview forms, is by investigating what's called the three characteristics, three aspects of conditioned existence that basically we find wherever we look. And these are impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, unreliability, the quality of things not being a source of permanent lasting happiness. And the third one is non-self, not self, lack of essence. And we'll talk some more about these over the coming days, and I'll be offering various meditation practices that we can use to probe into each of these in particular ways, if that's something that's of interest. I will say up front that we'll be offering quite a lot of practices over the course of the retreat. If you've done this retreat with Lee before, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. We will cover a lot of ground in these morning talks. You are not expected to master every insight practice by the end of the retreat. And in fact, if you tell me that you have mastered every insight practice in the course of the retreat, I will make a skeptical face because there's a lot of them and there's not enough time. The best insight practice is the insight practice that you want to do. Because if you don't want to do it, then yeah, you're probably not going to be that enthusiastic about doing it. There's a story from the Zen tradition. So you may know that Zen is famous for its use of koans, these little stories or questions where typically it's a record of somebody who historically asked a question and his teacher gave a surprising response and boom, something startling happened. And so Zen students will sit with these stories and try to investigate them and inquire into them in the hope of replicating that moment of insight. Zen Master Bankei was very skeptical about that. He said that, thought that was a complete waste of time, basically. He said that using someone else's spiritual question is like pretending to have lost your monk's robe and then going searching for it. Now, you're a monk, you've only got the one robe, so if you've lost your robe, you're in trouble, right? You need to get that back. Otherwise, yeah, that's going to be an issue. But if you're only pretending to have lost it, then how seriously are you really going to look for it? You know, you might do it for a while and then you get bored and you want something to eat or whatever, and you just kind of give up. Whereas if you've really lost your only article of clothing, yeah, you're going to look for that and look and look and look until you find it. So finding an insight practice that really speaks to you, finding something about maybe what I'm saying, maybe what Lee's saying, maybe something else in the Dharma that really makes you think, what's going on? I want to know more about that. That's interesting. Yeah, finding those kinds of threads and pulling on them and exploring those to see where they lead. That's probably the most effective way to engage with practice, because you've got a reason to stay with it when the going gets tough. But that being said, as I say, I'm going to throw out quite a lot of different practices. We'll try some of them out in guided form in these sessions. Others we won't have time for, so I'll just offer them and you can play with them or not in your own time. And yeah, just give them a try, see what comes up. Insight practice is really what leads to changing the way we see the world, to gradually approaching right view in the context of the Eightfold Path. Insight practice is what really changes who we are and how we relate to what's going on. So it's important. So with that in mind, we have a couple of different approaches for doing insight practice. One, which is probably the one that most people are more familiar with, is insight meditation. So in meditation, generally speaking, we're not that interested in the content of our thoughts particularly. We're doing something like exploring the nature of our experience in a more visceral, felt sense kind of way. So if we're interested in impermanence, let's say, then we might want to do something like pay attention to the breathing, but rather than steadying and stabilizing our attention on it, as we would if we were using the breath for samadhi as an access method, we might approach the breath to really investigate it, to look at the sensations as they come and go moment to moment, to see, is there an essence to this breath? Is there anything solid to it? Is there anything fixed? Can I find anything that is distinctively the breath, or do I just find flickering, intangible sensations coming and going? So that's kind of one approach to an insight meditation, very much on the sensory level. But another approach is what we might call insight contemplation. And in a contemplation practice, at least the way we use the language, rather unhelpfully, other traditions have meditation, contemplation the other way around, but hey-ho. But for the kind of insight contemplation that we'll be talking about on this retreat, you might take a theme like the Four Noble Truths, or today we're going to be working with some classic themes from Buddhism, old age, sickness, death, that kind of thing. So you take a theme, and then you sit with it and explore it any way you want to. You're welcome to think about it. You're welcome to investigate it any way you like. If that all feels a bit intellectual and wordy and like there's too much going on, then equally you can just bring up the theme and sit with it and see what comes up within you as you continue to sit with the theme. Basically, in contemplation, pretty much anything goes. So in just a minute, as I say, we'll be doing a guided contemplation. And the main thing I would say about contemplation is it's an exploration, right? I would encourage you not to settle on a final answer. So you bring up some topic, you know, how do I feel about the fact that I'm going to die? Oh, well, I think this. Done. Right, when's he going to give us the next one? And then you sit there for a few minutes and your mind wanders and it gets very boring. Certainty is an interesting thing. I tend to be increasingly suspicious, actually. Anytime I feel certain about anything, I tend to take that as a red flag that there's something going on there. There's something that I've kind of grabbed onto, and that might be worth investigating. So far, at least, I've always found that there's more to see than I've seen so far. So I would encourage you to just keep going, keep inquiring, keep exploring with each of these themes. So the specific practice we'll be doing today comes from Anguttara Nikaya 557, and it's usually called the Five Daily Reflections. The title of the discourse is sometimes translated as something like Subjects for Regular Reviewing, and you know, once a day is pretty regular, right? So yeah, Five Daily Reflections, why not? And these are five themes which, like I say, get to the heart of the Buddha's own questions about the spiritual life. We're going to look at old age, sickness, death, loss, cause and effect, the consequences of our actions, karma, guilt, that kind of stuff. So I guess by way of a sort of content warning up front, we are going pretty much into some challenging territory, potentially. This practice can well bring some stuff up. So do be gentle with yourself. Do, you know, take care with it, particularly if there's any kind of history of trauma or anything like that. These practices can be very powerful. I think Lee has said in the past that he's done an entire retreat just on this practice. Yeah, it's a good one. So yeah, take it slowly, just follow along and see where it takes you. There's a few different ways of working with the five themes in the Five Daily Reflections. What we're going to do today is we'll go through each one in turn. For each one, I will read out the sort of headline statement, the main theme, and I'll invite you to then say it out loud after I've said it. So it's a kind of way of engaging participation in it. There's something psychologically powerful about speaking something out loud that kind of engenders a greater commitment to what's going on. So I'll say it and then you can repeat it out loud. And then we'll have some time to explore the theme. And during this period of time, you're welcome, as I say, to explore it in any way that you like. Every minute or so, I will drop in what I call a probe, which is another little statement that can help us to sort of explore and come at this from different angles and find different ways of questioning and looking at what's going on. You're very welcome to completely ignore the probes if you want to, but equally, I found that the various different probes will often bring out aspects of the theme that wouldn't have occurred to me without them. So that's what we're going to do. I'll read the theme, you'll repeat the theme, and then we'll have some practice time during which I'll just drop in these little probes and, yeah, see what happens. So, without further ado, let's get into it. So get yourself set up in a comfortable posture, however you might normally meditate. And we'll just take the first few minutes to settle the mind. So using your access method or metta or however you like to get concentrated. So just take a few minutes to do that first. Okay, first theme. It's two short sentences, so I'll say it first and then repeat afterwards. Am subject to old age. I am not exempt from old age. So, is this true? How do I react to this truth? What do I do to cover it up, either for other people or for myself? How do I feel about parts of my body not working as well as they used to? How do I treat people who I consider old? How will I want to be treated as I get older? And if this is true for me, then it's true for everyone else as well. Everyone I know is subject to old age, no matter how I feel about them. Okay, second theme. I am subject to illness. I am not exempt from illness. So, is this true? How do I react to this truth? Am I grateful when I'm healthy? How do I react when I'm ill? How do I treat other people who are ill or have been diagnosed with an illness? How would I want to be treated if I were diagnosed with an illness? If this is true for me, it's true for everyone else as well. Everyone I know is likewise subject to illness, no matter how I feel about them. And the third theme. I am subject to death. I am not exempt from death. So, is this true? How do I react to this truth? Will this body really become a corpse? Is my remaining lifespan really decreasing continuously? Is it true that I can't bargain with death? Given that my death is unavoidable, but the time of death is uncertain, how should I live? If this is true for me, it's true for everyone else as well. Everyone I know is likewise subject to death, no matter how I feel about them. The fourth theme, just one sentence this time. All that is dear and delightful to me will change and vanish. So, is this true? How do I react to this truth? Suppose I have something precious to me and it gets lost. What is my reaction? Are there things which were dear and delightful to me, which have already changed and vanished? Do I appreciate what I have right now? If this is true for me, then it's true for everyone else as well. Everyone I know has dear and delightful things which will change and vanish, no matter how I feel about them. And then the fifth theme. This one's a bit longer, so we'll say it piece by piece. I'll say a bit, you repeat it. I'll say the next bit, you repeat it, and so on. I am the owner of my actions. I am the recipient of my actions. I am born from my actions. I am bound to my actions. I am inseparable from my actions. Any action I take, whether good or evil, I will receive its result. So, I am the owner of my actions. I make choices every day, and I have the responsibility for the outcomes of those choices. Is this true? I am the recipient of my actions. The choices I've made have defined the person I am now, and the consequences of those choices come back to me in other ways too. Is this true? I am bound to my actions. I can't escape or erase the choices I've made, or those I'll make in the future. Is this true? Inseparable from my actions. I'm known in the world through my actions, and other people see me through the lens of those actions, not for who I believe myself to be deep down. Is this true? How aware do I tend to be of the consequences of my actions? If this is true for me, then it's true for everyone else as well. Everyone I know is the owner and recipient of their actions, no matter how I feel about them. Alrighty. So I said there was one more thing to cover for today. And I think yesterday I mentioned that, you know, we're working with jhanas on this retreat, right? We're interested in these states of enhanced well-being. And because of that, it's very helpful if we can do things like relax and chill out and maybe enjoy ourselves a little bit and not have the frown lines etching themselves deeper and deeper into the forehead. And so there's a few things that we can do at the start of the sitting which will help to set us up in a positive frame of mind and may also help to focus us in terms of using our time on this retreat well. So this is a list that I got from Lee for five things to do at the start of a sitting. So the first thing is gratitude. It's nice to start a sit with a bit of gratitude. That could be gratitude for this Buddhist tradition that we are the beneficiaries of. You know, people, every generation going back thousands of years have practiced and taught and preserved this stuff so that we can now hang out on Zoom and explore it for ourselves. That's pretty cool, actually. Or maybe it's gratitude for the people around us, the people who make it possible for us to be here. or the people more widely who enable us to live the lives that we do. Gratitude's a nice thing. The more we practice it, the more we start to find actually to be grateful for in the course of our lives. So that's a nice way to start, with just a little bit of gratitude. Second thing we can do is take a moment to check in with our motivation. What brings us here? Why are we doing this practice? There's something quite important about exploring our motivation, because meaning is very important to us, right? The why of things is important. It matters what we're trying to get out of the practice. If we're interested in all sorts of different things, if we reconnect with that motivation, when you're a few days into a retreat and maybe you're having a few tough sits back to back and you start to think, oh, I'm a bit sick of this, maybe I'll just, maybe I'll just give up and go to the cinema or something, do something fun for a change. It can be interesting to remind ourselves, well, hang on a minute, I signed up to this with something in mind, right? There was a reason that I wanted to be here. What was that? Oh yeah, now I remember. Yeah, all right, maybe I can put up with one or two more sits. The third one, Lee normally calls this one determination. I'm going to call it intention, because for me personally, determination is not a helpful word in this context. Determination for me brings those frown lines straight back and all of my muscles clench and I start visualizing a wreath of flames around my body because I'm putting so much effort in and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, what we're getting at here is essentially deciding how we're going to spend this time and committing to using it well. So what are we going to do in this sit? Maybe we're working on the jhanas, and what we're going to do in this sit is use our access method, see if we get to access concentration. If we do, then try for the first jhana. Maybe you're a more experienced practitioner, you're doing jhanas already. Maybe you decide that actually you're going to spend the first 45 minutes doing jhana practice, the last 15 minutes doing insight, something like that. Choosing how to spend your time. It's actually quite powerful to set an intention at the start, because that tends to then carry through the practice, to some extent almost independent of what you're actually doing in terms of the practice itself. If you're clear about your intention, if you're clear about what you're interested in, practice is much more likely to move you in that direction. Whereas if you don't really know why you're doing any of it or what's going on or anything, you may just kind of float around in circles. So having a sense of intention, maybe if the word works for you, building up a bit of determination that you're going to use this time well. But if you find that that's turning into starting each sit, kind of revving your motor and getting the striving engine going, then yeah, maybe back that off a little bit. So having begun with some gratitude, checked in with our motivation and set an intention for the sit, the next thing is to do metta. And if you're going to pick one of the five, then pick this one. Lee, Iyakema both recommend, do metta every time you sit. It doesn't have to be tons of metta. It doesn't have to be half an hour or anything like that. It could just be a minute or two. But do a bit of metta. Always for yourself and sometimes for other people. Metta is all about generating this sense of loving kindness, right? This sense of benevolence, of well-wishing, of a boundless capacity to wish good things for all beings. If we're interested in creating a positive mind state for ourselves that we can then move towards one of these states of enhanced well-being, you can't do much better than metta, really. Metta, it works as an access method. It works pretty much all the way into the jhanas. It also works as just something to put a few drops of at the beginning of a sit, just to set the mind state in a positive direction before you start going. And then the fifth one is a little phrase, a little gatha from Thich Nhat Hanh, which you can just say to yourself a few times at the beginning of the sit, particularly if you're using the breath as your access method. Again, it's a way of kind of linking the breath with a positive mind state and moving things in a helpful direction. And it's breathing in, I calm body and mind. Breathing out, I smile. Breathing in, I calm body and mind. Breathing out, I smile.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.